Now is the perfect time at OvationHair.com.
It's the perfect time to try Ovation Cell Therapy because Ovation is celebrating its 10-year anniversary and they're offering you 15% off everything. But the party ends this week. Go to OvationHair.com and new customers should select USA News at checkout. That's OvationHair.com. Be quick. 15% off ends this week. The Dakota Access Pipeline is about ready to get flowing. They're starting to fill the pipes with oil. Here's more on the story from Mark Mayfield.
In a court filing, Energy Transfer Partners say the pipeline underneath North Dakota's Lake Oahe has been filled with oil. The company didn't say when it expects oil to start flowing through the pipeline, but it did say it's preparing to put it in full service. President Trump gave the green light to the pipeline after the Obama administration halted it over protests led by two Native American tribes. They believe a break in the pipe could threaten their water supply.
A Tennessee couple facing child abuse charges after they tried to sell their infant on Craigslist. According to the Greene County Sheriff's Office, John Kane and Deanna Greer are facing charges of aggravated child abuse and aggravated child neglect. The deputy said the couple posted an ad on Craigslist offering to sell their five-month-old child for $3,000. Undercover state agents responded to the ad on Friday, and after the transaction took place, they arrested the pair. USA Radio News.
Welcome to Geico's Motorcycle Meanderings.
Oh man, this is great. I sure saved a lot of money by switching to Geico. I scored some big savings and now I can use their mobile app 24/7 for all sorts of stuff. Life just makes sense now. You know what doesn't make sense? If a car is called a horseless carriage, why isn't a motorcycle called a horseless horse? Maybe it would just be adding insult to injury for the out-of-work horses.
Geico Motorcycle. Savings that make sense.
The United Nations is holding a conference to ban nuclear weapons, but the United States isn't going to be there, and the U.S. isn't alone in skipping it. Here's Mark Mayfield.
Other nations staying away from the week-long talks include Russia, China, Great Britain, France, and South Korea. America's U.N. Ambassador Nikki Haley told reporters that the U.S. and other boycotting nations would love to have a ban on nuclear weapons, but Haley says those countries can't protect their citizens by allowing what she called bad actors to have nukes while nations trying to keep peace and safety don't have them. Haley says the U.S. has reduced its nuclear arsenal by 85% since the late 1960s.
Starting in 2020, they'll no longer be the Oakland Raiders. They'll be the Las Vegas Raiders. Here's more from correspondent Chris Barnes.
The NFL commissioner says they worked a long time to keep the Oakland Raiders in Oakland.
For over a decade to try to find that viable option in Oakland.
Commissioner Roger Goodell speaks after team owners overwhelmingly approved the move from Oakland to Las Vegas. The vote coming during the annual league meeting in Phoenix yesterday. Goodell says he's disappointed for the fans in Oakland.
This is something that I know we'll be seen with a great deal of disappointment by them, and we understand that.
The Raiders' move to Las Vegas won't happen until at least 2020 when a new domed stadium's completed. I'm Chris Barnes.
Police are holding one person after a loss. The Secret Service says the man with the package was making some suspicious comments near the White House. The package was cleared, the suspect being questioned. USA Radio News.
Good morning, Hunterdon. This is Big C coming to you from HunterdonChamberRadio.com at the studio offices of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce in Flemington, New Jersey. Good morning, Hunterdon kicks off your day by providing you with local news, traffic and weather, as well as light topics through Vitamin C, Wake Up Call, and Chamber Chat. I also have many guests focusing on Hunterdon County community, business, and education. Listen to me every weekday morning from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. on Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamberRadio.com.
Hi, this is Joe Peters with Real Estate Matters, and I'm sitting with Susan Hoffman, who I'm going to introduce you to as we get started. We're going to talk about the surrogate's office and all the things that it's amazing they do, and some of the questions I know I have, and I think some of my listeners will have as well. But before we get started, I'm going to give you the scientific weather report that comes from my high-tech Android. And what right now we're talking about 52 degrees and raining. If you were out about 5 o'clock last night, like spring broke loose. It was beautiful. And I'm hoping again today, late in the day, and we're hoping for it. And then it's going to be nice for the next 3 days, 60 on Wednesday, 55 on Thursday, 47 with a little bit of rain again on Friday. And then Saturday's April 1st already, and it's 53, 57 on Saturday and Sunday. So that's the weather. I'm going to play you a few of our paid commercials, and we'll be back in about 2 minutes.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days. With Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
This is Tony Clark, paraplanner at Patton Heidi & Associates. Americans believe they should be in charge of their own future, how they will live tomorrow. Since 1894, Ameriprise Financial has worked for their clients' futures, helping millions of Americans retire on their terms, when they want, where they want, doing what they want. Today, Patton Heidi & Associates, a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., remains true to the vision of always putting clients first. We are ready to help you put a confident retirement more within reach. Put the strength of a leader in retirement planning to work for you through a personal one-to-one relationship. Patton Heidi & Associates will work with you to develop a plan to help you pursue your retirement goals. Call today at 913-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor, Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., member FINRA and SIPC.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weichert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime. And selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 and Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technologies to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Hi, this is Joe Peters, and I'm back with Susan Hoffman. Let me say hello to Susan. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
Great, great. I'm glad you could join us. I've read a little about your background. I know we've met in the past, but I'd like to start with sort of how you got to Flemington. That's what I asked Paul last week, the mayor, and found out that he transferred in about 27 years ago, but it looks like you've always been here.
Not in Flemington, but always in Hunterdon.
Always right. In Hunterdon,
yes.
Okay.
So. I was born and raised in Lebanon Borough.
Oh, neat.
And went to North Hunterdon High School.
Okay.
And how did I get to Flemington? I was working during the summer for Hunterdon County National Bank,
mm-hmm.
and I heard that they were hiring in the county for summer help. So I went to the county clerk's office, and they said, no, we're not hiring, but we think the surrogate's court is hiring for the summer. So I went to the surrogate's court and for a summer job, and 33 years later, I'm still there.
Wow. So your position today is an elected position?
Correct.
Okay. Was it appointed up front, I read, or?
For me, yes. The surrogate previous to me resigned before the end of her term.
Okay.
So I was appointed by Governor Kane.
Got it.
Until the next election, and then I ran in the next election.
I see. So I know, I remember Mary running. Were you running at the same time?
No, our terms don't coincide.
Okay.
We both have a five-year term, but they don't start at the same time.
So Fred, yourself, Mary, Fred, our sheriff,
right.
and then the prosecutor, he gets appointed.
He's appointed, yeah. Yes. Yeah, the three of us run.
So
Fred has a three-year term, Mary and I have a five-year term.
Interesting. So when is your next term up?
Next year.
Oh, good.
I run in 2018.
We'll get out. I'll carry the poster for Susan Hoffman next year and say, vote here. Vote often.
That's right.
I guess Hunterdon County is pretty much a Republican county. I know Susan Legay said if you're going to be in politics in Hunterdon, you probably want to be on the Republican side.
Yes.
And she helped us. That's where we originally met, was on the Leadership Hunterdon program. But there's a good Democratic representation.
Yes.
They just,
mm-hmm.
I guess, in yep. Hunterdon
yeah.
County. And I tell people when they come here, I said, forget your political belief. It's the county in New Jersey that is the only Republican county in New Jersey. All the others, 20 others, are predominantly Democratic. So it's sort of where the money is. And yeah, the county is changing. I learned that through the demographics when I was doing the Leadership Hunterdon program, but we're still pretty predominantly Republican, I guess.
That's right, that's right. But it's funny, working in the courthouse where you work with the judges.
Right.
Everybody's just, you know, either a judge or a clerk. We don't know, if you don't look at anybody by their party in the courthouse because that has to all be left outside the walls of the courthouse.
Interesting.
So it's interesting. Yes, it's a very interesting sort of dynamic that you have to sort of walk both sides.
Huh. And I know Suzanne said one of the things she had the hardest thing to get was so that she could go through the voting record and decide who voted when and start advertising. So I guess the public record of how you registered to vote last time is available. They don't know who exactly you voted for, but
right.
if you voted in the primary, they probably
they'll know do. Who you voted for, right?
Interesting.
Yeah.
I remember, I don't know, I think we were nuts, but probably 8 years ago, Hillary was running and we didn't want her to win. So we registered Democrat just to vote against her in a primary. It didn't help. She still won. And then the next we registered as independents.
Sure.
And I guess that's totally legal because we did
sure.
it.
Sure. And a lot of people do that for the local level too, where the races are, get a little bit tighter.
So they're just trying to swing it in the
sure,
direction they
sure.
want it, swung it. And that's politics. But how many people sort of on the election level voted last in the presidential? How many votes did we have out of Hunterdon County?
Ooh, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
I don't know the
question.
Answer to that.
I should have asked Mary that
yes,
when she was
yeah,
here
she
two
would
weeks
know.
Ago. So every year there's certain officials that come up. I know this time Suzanne and John Lanza ran, and John took over as the head of the
freeholders. Freeholder board.
And up until then, Suzanne was that. And I guess they take turns every couple
correct,
of years.
Right.
And then I know I'm involved in the Warren Chamber, and the mayor there, Mary Ann's been mayor 7 times, but she's mayor for like a year, and then somebody else takes a turn, and somebody else takes, and then she gets another turn.
Right, right.
So there are all different ways of doing politics.
That's
I
right.
guess.
Well, that's in a township where you don't elect a mayor; you elect the council, and then they elect a mayor between amongst themselves.
Okay.
So that's how they rotate those, right?
I always remember when we saw the play Nonsense and all the nuns, and the one line that I've never forgotten from it was, "You're the one with the big crucifix. That's your decision to make." So it's like last year, Suzanne Legay had the big crucifix, and this year, John Lanza has
that's
it.
Right,
and
that's
I've invited
right.
both of them to be on shows in the near future. I had Matt Holt on the show about 4 weeks ago. Very interesting. And we've had several people come in and talk to Weikert's business meeting. We have a meeting every Tuesday. We have about 110 agents out of our office, but at any one meeting we get about half of them. And they came in and did an overview, Suzanne and Mark Selleck and Sue Damaris, I never can say her name right, came in and talked about what's happening. And I think it wasn't Matt Holt that day, it was the fellow who lives in Clinton. He's also a freeholder. Who were the other freeholders?
We got John King.
John King, and there's one more.
Rob Walton.
Okay, so I had Rob Walton on about 4 weeks ago. And
okay.
Matt Holt came in and talked because he knew a lot of the people in our... It's amazing how many people know each other in this county.
Yes.
The most amazing thing I find in real estate is 3/4 of the houses that I list, I have to go buy a lock for the front door because people don't lock their doors out here. It's that kind of a county.
That's right.
So tell us about the surrogate's office in your own words. I could read this, but I think you probably could tell us a lot easier.
Well, it's kind of interesting because most people think of the surrogate's court and go to probate wills.
Right.
Which, and that's correct. But that's not just the only thing we do. So it's always fun when I sort of tick off some of the other things that we do that people are sort of surprised. So if a person dies without a will, it's my responsibility to appoint an administrator.
Okay.
And then I have to, there's certain statutes that you follow. You
right.
go to the spouse first, you go, then children are on the next level. If there's no children, you go to parents or siblings.
Right.
So there's a scheme as to who you're supposed to appoint, but then out of that group, you have to determine which one would be the best one.
And is that a same scheme no matter where you are in the state?
Correct.
Okay,
correct,
so
yeah,
it's a set of statutes.
Yes,
that we
New Jersey
follow.
Statutes, right. Anymore, administrator has to post a bond to for their faithful performance of the job. Interesting enough, because I guess because of the climate that we're in at the moment, bonds are harder and harder for some people to qualify for if they've had any bankruptcy in their background.
Yep.
So that's another thing that now we have to look at before we appoint somebody to be the administrator and ask them, are you going to be able to, you know, get a bond?
So you almost have to do a credit check on them before they can.
Right, right.
Wow. And then if there's no administrator that's evident, you have the society that you belong to, which are guardians. Guardianship.
Well, that's for guardians. That's for a person that's been declared incapacitated.
Got it.
That if they have no family members, we appoint a guardian for them. If we can't find any family members to be an administrator, and appoint I appoint an attorney who will stand up and will do it. We've appointed accountants if it's a family accountant that's familiar with the family and they're willing to do it. They're public administrators. Some states have like a public administrator that you appoint for that would be like a state employee, but New Jersey doesn't have that. So we have to go and find somebody in the community.
So there's this pecking order protocol, whatever you want to call it, that you go through to find the right administrator. But in a lot of cases, a person shows up with a will, and that will names the administrator, or the main administratrix, I guess it is.
Right, the executor.
The executor.
Yeah, the will names an executor of a will.
So that makes it easier.
That makes it easy, yes.
But how do you know, and this is my question before we got started, that that's the latest will?
We don't.
You don't.
No, you really have to take the word of the executor that brought the original will in that is the last one.
Right.
Because a lot of people think that mom or dad or grandma or grandpa have filed the original will with the courthouse.
Right.
And they come in after they die, and we're like, no, we don't file any wills until the person dies.
Okay.
I mean, the reason for that is because a will is revocable, so you can change it as many times as you want to.
Right.
But yeah, unless you know that, you know, the person went to the same attorney all the time, and you go back to the attorney for the records for them to show you which one was the last one, you really don't know. It's a standing concern, because I'm sure there's people that go in and find a will, don't like what it says, and it never finds its way to the courthouse.
I can imagine that too, because what we did was with DJ and with the, and we'll talk a little bit more about it later. We decided to do our wills last year, and this question came up, and we said, well, how will the kids open the vault? First of all, I don't know how they open the vault. That's another whole question. Will they understand that this is the latest will, and will somebody correct it? And then what I discovered from talking to people is no, there is no. I would have thought you write a will, you sort of record the will with the county so they know this was the latest one and they can look for it when you die, but it doesn't work that way.
No, it doesn't.
You do probably do a public notice that a will has been probated, and anybody who wants to contest it can come up and say, no, I think I...
No.
No?
No. We used to advertise in the newspaper for creditors.
Okay.
And when I say we, me as the surrogate had to advertise in the newspaper for creditors. And then you were told you had 6 months to present your claim to the executor. But they took that out of, they removed it from the statute probably about 8 years ago.
Huh.
And now the onus is on the creditor to find the estate to file the claim against it.
That's interesting.
So we don't do that at all. Now, once the will is probated, the executor has to send out a notice to all the next of kin and all the beneficiaries and tell them the will's been probated, and that if you want a copy of the will, you can request a copy. That's supposed to start then the process if anybody wants to contest the will, because that's when the time starts.
And if I remember when my dad died, and this was 98, so it was a long time ago already, rest his soul, we went to New Brunswick, which is, we lived in Middlesex County, and we probated the will. And then we had to wait like 6 or 10 weeks or something. There was a period of time, and my attorney did everything, and we had to, I think, notify all the creditors. We had to pull a credit report and see how much money was owed, if it was anything.
It had
to be settled as part of the estate.
Right. There's a 10-day waiting period from the date of death till the will can be probated.
Okay.
And the reason for that is so the first will through the door isn't the one that gets probated. So we supposedly that's going to help us probate the last will.
Okay.
But then on the other end, you're supposed to wait a certain period of time for the creditors to bring, you know, to present all their bills before you can distribute.
Right.
Probate has already started, but you really have to hold on to distribution till you make sure you have all the bills.
Now, my father is a very organized person, which is probably not the case in more cases than not, because he not only had me as an access to his safety deposit box, I had access to it after his death. I was named as that. And I know the banks are very fussy about if you try to get into the safety deposit box and every person has died, they need some documentation that you're allowed to get into
that.
Yes,
yeah. If your name is not on there as a joint owner, the only way you can get in is to show that you're the executor.
Okay.
All right, but the original will's in the safety deposit box, and I can't name you the executor until we get the original will out.
So it's a catch
22. Oh, yeah. We've run into that a lot. The banks are supposed to go into a bank with a copy of the will.
Right.
And identification to show that you're the person named in that will, and it's in that box. They're supposed to open the box and let you have it.
Okay.
Some of the banks just won't do that. So we've had to issue an order ordering the bank to release the will either to me or to the executor. Or sometimes if I show up at the bank a few years ago, I would go to the bank with the executors and then they would give the will sort of jointly to us.
Okay.
And I guess that made their legal department feel a little better that at least the court knows that the will's in their hands.
So the orderly steps would be to, A, write a will. You need an attorney to do that. You need to be of sound mind, because I know I wanted to change my father's will. He wanted to change it, but the attorney said, he's not of sound mind. I can't change that will at this point in time. And I don't remember what the situation was, and it wasn't a major change, but several months later, we represented the situation, and he was more in control and could explain what he wanted to do, and we did get that done. So, I mean, the attorneys, even though he's your attorney, is going to make sure
Absolutely.
You're not dragging somebody in that's under duress and changing right. things at the
right.
end.
But especially if he was writing somebody out of the will, because that would be
right.
that would be an easy way to challenge the will.
Yeah, that's a good point. I never even considered that. I don't remember what it was we were trying to change, but I just remember saying, Jim said to me, Joe, I can't make that change. You've got to bring your dad back when I can talk to him and without you in the room, and he has to
right.
convince me. So we were able to do that in this case. So, A, get a will written. That's important
right.
because then you're deciding, and it may not be that you have a lot of money to leave people, but it decides how things happen. Like in my case, what happens to my body after death is in my will.
Right.
I want specific things like cremation and burial at sea, and we've written it in the will so that it's a codicil to the will, I think they call it. But it's in there. It's in there. And
now, the only caveat to that,
okay,
and I can say, and I only bring this up because I've seen it happen in my office, the will's not usually the will obviously isn't probated until
well
like 10
after.
Days later.
Yes.
So sometimes if the executor hasn't read the will to see what's supposed to happen for the funeral, sometimes they haven't done the right thing. So just make sure your executor knows
yes.
ahead of time what you want.
Yes, and
done.
It's a very special situation where I made my attorney the executor. And
very good.
And gave her authority to be paid out of the proceeds so that she wanted me to get the will prepaid, but that she would get paid X dollars for whatever the hours were to get it done. She also said to write a letter to each one of my heirs and explain to them why I did what I did so there's
sure.
no misunderstanding of it to be distributed after death. She said you could also give them all a copy of the will right now. But what I did was my kids are adults, and as I said, it's a special situation, but I explained to each one of them that here's what I'm going to have done so it's not a surprise to you.
Yep. And a lot of attorneys are videotaping that. Instead of
wow.
doing the writing, they're doing a videotaping of sort of your last wishes.
What a great
wishes.
Idea.
Yeah.
What a great idea. Okay, so the right thing to do, write a will, do all the things we just talked about, put a copy in a really safe place like a bank vault, and give somebody access as your co, I don't know what the right term would be, but also have access.
Pro-owner
on the bank vault.
Yeah.
That way, after death, they can get in and they can get the will and take it to the attorney, and then the attorney takes it. Now, that's simple. That doesn't sound that simple, but that's the most straightforward way. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't do that. And then what you described happens is that you have to sort of figure out who's
right.
in line to do all of this
yeah.
stuff.
And the interesting thing, to go back to that bond that I had alluded to before, so when a person dies without a will, the person coming in to be appointed has to go through every asset that the person has, and we have to then tally it up, and obviously it's never point right on the target,
right.
but then we set the bond. Now if a person dies without a will, we have no idea what the value of the estate is. So
right.
it's nice in that terms that at least that doesn't become public what your value is
Interesting.
Of your estate. But if you die without a will,
it has to be there. It
right?
has to be public. So the will is a private matter as long as there's a will. If the will is not in existence, it then becomes a public matter. And
well, they're both public, but just the value with a will,
right?
Private. Right, because everything that I do in my court is public record. You can
okay.
come in and read anybody's will that's been probated.
Right.
You can look at any estate. When at the end of an estate, when people, the attorneys usually file a release and refunding bond where the beneficiary says, this is how much money I received, that's all public knowledge.
Okay.
Now, my court also does adoptions. Those are not public knowledge. Those are all sealed.
Interesting.
And then guardianships that we do for incapacitated people, a lot of that information is locked down just because of, it's got people's bank accounts and
right.
account numbers and stuff on the accounting.
So it doesn't come under the Public Right to Know Act. It's privileged information legally.
But as a realtor, you'll appreciate that in a guardianship, certain information is public because the title searchers need it for when we go to sell the property. So some of it has been because obviously the title searchers were complaining you can't do a title search on a docket that's been
sealed.
Right.
Wow. Sounds like I know what I'm talking about already. So do the right thing, get a will written, get it filed with the attorney, get the people that are the benefactors or executors, you had a word for the executor, the
executor
of the will. Let them know what it is and make your family aware of what's going on. If you don't have a will, the court's going to do that for you. And what percentage would you say don't have wills on an average?
In a quarter, we probate in Hunterdon County. I probate about 120 wills in a quarter.
Okay.
And we do about 15 to 20 administrations that same time.
So that's about 10 to 15%.
Yeah.
I thought it would be higher than that. That's good to hear. But we may be a more organized county than most.
And I think you're right. I think we are. Because the few administrations that I do are usually young people that have died suddenly.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Which we're seeing a lot of with the drug situation, I guess. I know in talking to people for the leadership Hunterdon, and I understand there's a bigger issue than it used to be, but not as big as most places, but it's still here.
But you have to remember, we were talking earlier about what the numbers of deaths are in Hunterdon County, and that's what people sometimes think, that I'm vital statistics, but I'm not. The only records that I have are people that have died with an estate.
Okay.
Or if a person dies and everything is in joint names between husband and wife, sometimes the will's never probated. So I don't really have good, accurate, vital statistic numbers. Okay. I only know of people that die with an estate.
So let's go through that scenario. Husband and wife have lived together for a lot of years, and one of them dies, and there's no will. Then it's in joint names, and the other one is the benefactor owner in that situation. There must be some interesting twists and turns to that, but that's...
And it's usually an automobile. It's usually an automobile that, you know, everybody in Hunterdon County seems to buy two cars. We put one car in his name, one car in her name. And so then when they die, they usually have to come in and do something just for the car to hand. Now, we're seeing a little bit less of that with people leasing cars these days.
Right.
But, yeah, it usually is a car that hangs up a lot of people. That, or I have to tell you, we do an awful lot of administrations anymore for the New Jersey unclaimed property when they advertise all those lists of people that have unclaimed property, either through insurance proceeds or something. Somebody always finds grandma's name in there or Uncle Pete. We opened up an estate just for the unclaimed property.
Isn't that interesting? I know from real estate, the most unique thing we see is a little off, little digression, but it's in the same thing, is that at the closing, the husband and wife have to sign that they were never married before. And it's interesting to see that some discussions have never been had. Almost like, I gotta make a few calls.
Oh, that's funny.
So, once again, this is Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. We're on the Real Estate Matters program. I'm sitting here interviewing Susan Hoffman, who is our Hunterdon County surrogate. If you'd like to talk to Susan directly, her number is 908-788-1156. That'll get you the main number, and they could put you through to Susan or the right person that in her department can handle your question. How many people are in the surrogate's office?
Five, including myself.
Okay. So we're talking about wills, but you do a lot of other things. I'm just looking at the list that's here. She has a great booklet on how to get organized. I mean, she gave that to us when we first talked, and it's amazing how many people aren't organized. And it's just, I don't know if it's born into you or bred into you. Either you're organized or not. It's almost like either you're intelligent or whatever. I'm not going to go there. But this helps you say, here's the things you really should have track of. And it's about a 19-page document. And if you go onto the surrogate site, you can print it down. But there's like a what to do first primer. So,
and that actually, that him, that pamphlet was actually made that I hand out to the funeral directors.
Okay.
So they put it in their package so the persons know that when you, you know, because some people don't know after a person dies, go to motor vehicle with the title and say, let's transfer the car. They don't even know they have to be appointed.
Right.
So we made that just for the, mainly for the funeral directors.
Okay.
And they handed out so it helped the people know to get to us.
And by the way, just while we're on funeral directors, I had an experience last year. I met DJ. He's also in the guardianship program. I guess he was the president last year. And DJ is the local funeral director for Ford and Wright. I guess it's now Wright Funeral Parlor. They overtook it and changed the name over time. The most easy guy to talk to in the world about the most difficult subject to talk to. I happened to mention to him that I wanted to be buried at sea. He came up with like 16 options. It's like, good grief. I just throw me off the back of a boat is all I was thinking about. But, I mean, you can be put into a little thing and attached to a coral reef, and they can GSP it, and the kids could snorkel down and see. And I said, DJ, my kids don't see me now when I'm alive. They're not going to come down to the Keys to look for me. But talking to a funeral director at some point in time makes some sense and getting organized. And that's where you're saying this booklet gets brought out. By the way, here's the things you need to consider.
Right.
And it's not a complicated and it's not a sad conversation. It's more of a logical conversation if you do it before there's a catastrophe at hand. As he said, most people come into my office and the deceased is downstairs and now they're trying to make decisions.
Right.
And if the deceased had specific wishes, they're probably not going to be even known because he's or she's not there to represent themselves
right.
anymore. So this helps you get organized. And if you just go to the Hunterdon County Surrogates Office site and it's point two, what to do first primer, it's there. Or see your local undertaker, it doesn't matter to us who you see. DJ Wright is one that I've used personally, very involved in the county, but they're all good. There's no preference here. I mean, and there's a list of 21 things here of how to obtain a copy of a death certificate. I remember when my dad died, I had to get like a dozen, it seems, of certified death certificates
right.
to send to the insurance companies and to the various people.
And everybody wants a certified copy. They want
right.
that. They want to feel that seal on it.
Right. So there's a lot to be considered there. And once again, it's easier to do it beforehand. And it's one of those I'll get around to it and you never get around to it. But we highly recommend that you maybe take some time out. Now, probating the will. Let's say everything was done in place and you've got the will and you think it's the last one and you take it to the surrogate attorney. The attorney has to be present, I guess.
No, not really.
Not really?
No.
Okay.
We probably get the majority of people probably do it without their attorney.
Okay.
So they bring, if you're the executor, you bring the original will and
right.
we stress the original, even though we tell people that on the phone, still people walk through the door with a copy. And the reason why we can't take a copy is because in New Jersey, if you want to revoke the will, basically what you do is rip it up and throw it out
Got
and
it.
Make a new will. So if you only have a copy, the statute makes it seem that the surrogate has to assume it's been destroyed. So we do need the original.
Okay.
You need a certified copy of the death certificate and a list of the names and addresses of the closest next of kin. So that would be like if you were married and had children, you would need the spouse and children's names.
Okay. And then what happens next?
And they present all that to us. We put that into the computer program, and then it spits out three forms. One's an application that the executor signs just asking the will to be admitted to probate. The second form is an oath where the executor swears they will do everything they're supposed to do, and they'll give an accounting if anybody asked. If any beneficiaries ask for an accounting.
Right.
And the third form is an authorization where they're saying this is their address as of today. And if someone wants to sue the estate and they're no longer at that address, then they can serve the surrogate.
Okay.
And I have to have that for every fiduciary. So you just sign those three documents. If the will's been properly signed and notarized and 10 days have elapsed, We'll go then to the next step, which is how many surrogate certificates do you need? And that's what you need, one for every bank, every automobile that you're going to transfer in the name of the decedent. Then there's a filing fee, and you pay the filing fee. And if all that is accomplished, then you'll get your certificates right there.
So the day you come in, you could walk away with a certificate?
Pretty much.
I thought there was a period of time that people had it. Well, I guess I
maybe
also,
in Middlesex.
Yeah, okay. I thought it got filed and people had a time to respond and came back in 3 weeks. If nobody complained, you got it.
No.
That clears that up.
Yes. And interesting, I just give a little plug to my wonderful freeholders at the moment, but after about 10 years of asking them to let us take credit cards, they finally are allowing us to take credit cards. So it's made it a lot easier because a lot of the executors are in from out of town.
Right.
Not everybody carries a checkbook on them anymore.
Right.
So
nobody carries a checkbook.
Nobody carries a checkbook.
It's like having a pay telephone booth. I saw on TV on Sunday morning, I watch a program from 9 to 10, a Jane Pauley host, and they were saying there's just free public telephones left in New York City. Free.
They took them all out of the Justice Center here.
Did they?
We don't have any more
amazing.
The Justice Center. I think there's one outside.
Now they have more like internet cafes where you can charge your phone and you can make a call and you can use the internet. But it's not like Superman changed his clothes in the kind of telephone booth anymore.
Yep, you're absolutely right.
So just to go backwards and come forward, if you're replacing a will with a new will, it sounds like one of the things you should do is destroy the original.
Right.
You may want to keep a copy. You may want to write copy on it. But if it's a copy, it's going to be very hard for somebody to get it filed because it's not the original.
Correct.
And the antithesis is the person who should be filing your will should know where the original is so that they can file the original. Now, I don't know why you'd keep a copy of an old will. I know when we redid ours, we shredded the old ones. As a matter of fact, they had rivets through them. Like a lot of times when we do a closing from outside the country, stuff comes in with rivets for some official thing in other countries.
And ribbons.
I love the British. But make sure your executor knows where the original is and make sure the original of the previous wills have been destroyed, so it's clear, because the court is not going to help you figure that out. They're going to take the one that was brought in that was original. So that cleared one thing up for me and a will. Now, if there is no original to be found, what happens next?
But you have a copy? I, as the surrogate, am not allowed to take testimony. So I refer it to the Superior Court, and then a hearing date is set up with a judge. And then basically that day in court, you have to convince the judge that you don't know of any reason why your mother would have ripped her will up.
Right.
Usually it's, you know, the person was in the throes of dementia and they were throwing everything out.
Yep.
So we've had a few times where there's either been a fire or a flood, and that would be then the will was in the house and got burned.
So an independent third party decides that, yes, this sounds like the case. It comes back to you, and then you proceed as if it's the original.
Correct.
And we went through what happens if there's no will. You go through all of the notifying and get the... Go through that one more time in a sentence or two. No will,
then the closest next of kin, like if there's a spouse, I go to the spouse first to be the administrator. If there's no spouse, then I go to the children and pick one of the children.
Okay.
If there's no children, we go to parents or siblings.
Okay.
In the state of New Jersey, I can go all the way to second cousins.
Wow.
So.
That's amazing.
Probably the last 8 years, if there's no second cousins, we can go to stepchildren. Stepchildren didn't used to be included, but now stepchildren have wiggled their way in the door.
Wow. Those little wigglers. So that's the will part of your business. There is also the guardianship part. Now, is that part of the surrogate's office? Let's talk about the guard. Now, I first bumped into this when I went to Susan Bryant's talk last year. She had talks. One was on, and they were all seniors-based. One was on hoarding. One was on...
can't remember what they were.
Dementia. and Alzheimer's, learned really, like, of the 70 people in the room, 50 of them were linked to loved ones through Alzheimer's. It was so sad to listen to some of the stories and realize what they're going through. And then the third one was that DJ ran, which was planning for your final situation. But I discovered, and then one of my customers, Cindy, was past president, I guess. She said, I'm sorry I didn't get you on my committee. What is Cindy's last name? Hoffman. Small woman, about 50-ish, blonde.
Who is she with?
I guess she was just on the...
Cindy Douglas.
Douglas,
she's
yes.
the executive director for Volunteer Guardianship.
Okay.
Yes.
Super relaxed. Everybody wants you to join their committee. You know, it's
right.
Nice to be involved, but how involved can you be? You're never going for supper after a while. And I got to learn a lot about it. It was very interesting. And this is for people that have no next of kin.
Correct. No family members.
In the county or available anywhere that can be found, and they need some guardianship.
Right.
So a state, I'll let you describe it.
So the volunteer guardianship doesn't initiate any guardianships, but once a guardianship's been filed and they say that the person has no immediate family to be appointed, then we're notified. And then if we try to match up a volunteer with that person,
okay,
and then we become their guardian, either for person and property. Sometimes just person, but usually we take property too, because you have the property just to apply for Medicaid, even if you don't have anything, but Medicaid is considered property. We started in 1996, and it really came out of when Hagedorn was open, and there was a lot of people there that just didn't have any family, and
right.
it kept hitting my court, because my court appoints the guardians.
Okay.
And we would be getting these files saying we have to appoint a guardian, but there wasn't anybody to appoint.
Mm-hmm.
So an attorney and I sort of sat down and we were talking about it, and we're like, well, we should be able to find volunteers. And then if we just get together a board of volunteers, and that's sort of how we did it. So the board
right.
is made up of myself and Linda Bryan from the hospital, and we have a doctor, and DJ is the undertaker.
Right.
We have a realtor. A couple financial persons, so we try to, and we have a chaplain, so if there's an end-of-life question.
Right.
So the volunteer has a nice support group to come to ask any questions they might have.
So then a volunteer guardian is appointed, and from that day forward, the best interest of the person's financial is under that guardian's jurisdiction.
Absolutely, yep.
Right on through death.
Right.
And I understand there was a little bit of we got to watch the guardians going on. Not that we had problems here in Hunterdon County, but
right.
there's a double check to make sure the guardians
right.
are doing their job,
right.
which is a check and
balance. The administrative office of the courts has taken over the monitoring system. And
okay.
so, like, everybody now has to account. They have to do a report of well-being. The state of New Jersey has taken it quite seriously. I always did it voluntarily here in Hunterdon County.
Right.
And a lot of people sort of made fun of me for doing it, because they would say, well, Susan, you don't find anything, so why are you wasting the time? But I was always under the impression, if you know somebody's looking over your shoulder, you have...
Yeah, you're a little more honest.
Yeah, right. You'll have less likelihood to do something wrong if you know somebody's watching.
Right. And how many people in a general year are under the volunteer guardianship?
Under volunteer guardianship? We had a board meeting this morning, and I think our caseload is 18 right now at the
okay.
moment. It goes up and down, but it's usually right around in there. Our numbers slacked off a lot when they closed Hagedorn, because
okay.
we were really servicing that facility a lot.
For those who may not know, that was our mental institution in, I guess, Highbridge area?
Glen Gardner, I think was their address.
Yeah, in that general yeah. area. And it was closed during the beginning of the Christie administration.
Right, right. But we still, you know, get cases, and we're slowly starting to reach out to Warren County and Somerset
okay.
County to expand our board a little
bit.
So
how does a case get referred to you? Is it usually through an attorney?
Either an attorney. Every person before they're declared incapacitated has to have a court-appointed attorney.
Okay.
So sometimes those court-appointed attorneys has heard of us, and so they'll recommend it. the Hunterdon Medical Center, the doctors over there know of us, and because we actually have a couple of volunteers that we call emergent guardians. So if somebody hits the hospital and they need a guardian a little bit quicker than anybody else, mainly probably just to either start the Medicaid process or to move them into a nursing facility, we have somebody that just picks them up in a hurry and does it until we get to the court hearing.
In an age or an era where we're living longer,
yeah.
Just saw a guy on a radio TV this morning, 100th year. His 100th birthday was yesterday, and he got dressed up and went back to work.
Went back to work. I saw that, too.
What a great story. What a great story. And at one point, she passed away, rest in peace. We had the oldest person. Not a long-lived title, usually, but she was right here in Alexandria, and she died last year. But people are living longer, and dementia, I know when I took the course, when Susan Bryant was doing it, she said if you live to 65, you got under 1 chance in 100 of having dementia. If you live to 75, it's like 1 in 25. And if you get to maybe 1 in 15, and it's 85, it's 1 in 25. So it goes up with age. It's like your cataracts. If you live long enough, you're going to have cataracts.
Right.
With the advent of living longer, the problem announced that you may outlive your heirs, or you may get out of touch with your heirs and nobody knows where they're at. There's one other facet that seems to play in here, and that is the adult protection. Does that have anything to do with the guardianship?
Adult Protective Services has to go out and investigate anything that they get referred to, I think, within 48 hours. Yes, they will file a complaint to have somebody declared incapacitated, and they quite often will say if there isn't any family, they'll refer it over to volunteer guardianship.
Okay, and they're sort of a state welfare, state...
Uh-huh, they come under social services.
Social services. Okay, welfare is not a good term for it. But I know one of the things they explained to me was a lot of times you have the children abusing the adult, their parent, and they do that. And sometimes the parents are abusing the children, but they're adults, and they do that.
Yeah. And financial abuse is what we see.
Right.
A lot of abuse, yeah.
No, I'm taking mom's Social Security check and keeping her in a closet kind of thing. I hope it's not that
bad. We have one case that we just went through. We know that he's taken $200,000 of his mother's. You don't know how much we don't know that he's taken over the years. But, it was referred to the prosecutor. Because that's a crime.
Okay. So the Adult Protective Services comes under social services. And I remember when I interviewed them last year, I said, well, what if Adult Protective Services contained alcoholism or drug abuse? And the answer was, which I thought was surprising, was that that's something that's been going on for a long time, and we don't really get into that. We deal with the results of it, but we don't try to solve the problem, which was an interesting answer, and I can understand it. There's only so much you can do.
Right,
you can't
solve
cancer all on your own.
Right.
And I apologize that as an example because it's not a good one. But so you've got Adult Protective Services leading to cases that come into the guardianship, leading to cases that then result in the things we discussed. It's very interesting. I didn't know all of this went on a year ago. I really didn't. And we're in a county where they call it cohorts, 10-year age groups. Our fastest-growing cohort, I'm told, is 75 to 85 in Hunterdon County. And if you think about it, we've got the under-35s going to New York, the over-65s going to Pennsylvania, everybody in the middle is getting older. I'm one of them, okay? And I say, 10 years ago, I couldn't spell senior, now I are one. But with living longer, and I saw my own father, it's not a great quality of life sometimes, and it leads to things like dementia or the child's in charge and is not really doing the job, and all of these things come up. So it's very interesting to learn about this. We've got 2 minutes left, believe it or not.
Believe it or not.
What did we talk about that you would like to talk about, Susan?
One of the things, I just jotted some notes here, and one of the things I put down is that the office, surrogate court, I should say, our records start 1804.
Wow.
So if there's anybody out there that genealogists and they want to come in and run their family name and look up, we have some absolutely fascinating inventories, which the attorneys don't file anymore.
Right.
But these are back in the 1800s, and they'll list
you know, the pig, the six bales of hay, you know, what every last thing was worth. And if it's in your family, the people just absolutely love it when they find one of the inventories in their family. So, and plus the wills, we have all the wills too. So just to read some of the more colorful wills, we don't seem to write wills today. They're all very legalese.
Yeah.
They don't really have don't give you a real flavor for the family. Some of the favorite wills I have, you know, is I leave everything to my wife, but if she gets remarried, she gets nothing.
Interesting.
So it's just, if even just for entertainment to come in and
sit. But they would have had to have been here, long-time resident here. So
sure, you're
not going to move in from Monmouth County and find it here.
Right.
But I do understand that both Morris and what's below us?
Mercer
were part of Hunterdon at one time. Most people don't know that. I learned that in Visit the Files week last year.
Right. I mean, we were part of Burlington, too, for a while.
Really?
Burlington County, yeah.
So, wow, Hunterdon was really bigger once.
Yeah.
Well, great. Anything else there?
Anything else? The only other thing was I had listed that we do the adoptions, but I think I mentioned that because they're sealed records. But we do the adoptions. We don't do many adoptions at all anymore. There aren't that many foreign children being adopted.
Okay.
The few adoptions that we do are pretty much step-parent adoptions anymore.
Interesting. So we have less adoptions than we used to, but if you record them.
Yes.
Okay, and it's a sealed recording for the sake of the people involved, which makes perfect sense. Well, great, Susan, this has been a wonderful conversation. I'm thinking out loud we should do it again in 3 or 4 months because I think there's a whole bunch of other things we could have talked about. Once again, my name is Joe Peters, and if you'd like to call me, I'm at 908-238-0118. If you'd like to call Susan Hoffman, who we've been interviewing today, she can be reached at 908-788-1156, and her hours are Monday to Friday, 7:45 to 5:15, right here in scenic downtown Flemington. Susan, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
I appreciate it, and it was informative to me and hopefully to the listening audience as well. And I will repurpose this and send you a copy of the recording.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime. And selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technologies to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.